Have you, or anyone you know, ever been in a relationship with a narcissist? Well, today we'll explore what narcissism actually is, because it's one of those terms frequently talked about, what it feels like to be in a relationship with a narcissist, and what you can do when you find yourself in this situation. And for more information, please head over to the relationshipmazepodcast.com, where we have more information on this podcast today. Or if you want to find out more about how to improve your relationships, please head over to the relationshipmaze.com. Well, welcome to today's episode of the Relationship Maze. Today, I will be talking to Dr. Mariette Janssen, who is a specialist on narcissism. And you might remember Mariette from February this year when we've had an interview and talked about Mariette's first project, which was the first book that she's written on the topic of narcissism. So let's just start with Mariette. Welcome to this show today. I'm really delighted to have you back. And it might be really helpful for those listeners who haven't encountered you yet to, if you give me a bit of an introduction to who you are and what got you working on narcissism in the first place.
Thank you, Angela, for having me. And let's talk about me. Me.
Yes, you.
That's what narcissists love.
Yes.
I'm not a narcissist, but I grew up in a family with a narcissistic mother, and that caused a lot of dysfunctionality in that family. It took me decades to discover what was going on. And then it took me another few years to decide to cut my mother out of my life. And since then, my life has the best ever. A narcissist is a very toxic personality, someone who affects other people in a really, really negative way. And I grew up with, you know, the idea of relationships in a certain format of a relationship that was presented or experienced through my mother, which I then also copied in my romantic relationships. Until, you know, things became clearer and I could step away from that. So,
and I wanted to, sorry to butt in there, Mariette, but just to ask you, because I'm aware that narcissism is a term that we hear a lot in the media, it gets bandied about a lot of the time. So what is it? What is narcissism? And is it the same as being in a toxic relationship, which is another term that we hear a lot?
Narcissism is a personality disorder. It has different causes. It can be hereditary. It can come from an upbringing and insecure attachment. It also can be physical. There are MRI scans of the brain that with outspoken narcissist, diagnosed narcissist, it shows that they lack a part of the brain. It's impossible for them to feel empathy, and it's impossible for them to experience positive emotions.
Wow.
So that is a little bit of the background around a narcissist. But what a narcissist does in their behavior is it's all about themselves. Mm-hmm. They are entitled. They are very special. They believe they are very special. And therefore, everybody else needs to sort of serve them. That's the attitude they have. They will never let the truth get in the way of their importance. So they lie, they twist, they deny that they are twisting anything and everything just for them to feel good. They have no empathy and no emotional awareness. And that makes them so dangerous, because that means that they just don't care about other people. They simply don't care. And the last thing is, I just, you know, did it on my finger. So the number five is they are always right. They cannot do anything wrong. And what is really typical for a narcissist and someone with strong narcissistic tendencies is that they campaign. They choose a target and they want that target to turn into their victim, and they don't let go. And that makes, so everyone can have a bit of narcissistic behavior from time to time. Yeah. So I started off, yeah, let's talk about me. Mm-hmm. We can all have a conversation where you're the center of the attention for whatever reason. Doesn't make you a narcissist. You can lie and twist around something because you want to have your way. It's a bit manipulative. It doesn't make you a narcissist.
Right. That just means that you have narcissistic traits, yeah, rather than being a narcissist, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And we all, from time to time, use those sort of things. Mm. And, you know, if it's an occasional appearance or an occurrence and it's, you know, it's not malicious, then it's unpleasant, maybe, for someone else. It's maybe not too nice, but it's not a narcissist.
Right. Okay. That's a really clear distinction, isn't it? Absolutely. And just to come back to sort of my second part of the question there, which was around toxic relationships, because toxic, this idea that's sort of thrown around a lot as well, being in a toxic relationship. So what's the poison of a narcissist?
A narcissist takes over who you are. And I've got this picture where I say they are like an octopus. Yeah. Imagine that an octopus comes into your system through your heart. You know, soft tissue, nice and warm and kind. And so they come in there and then they wriggle themselves all the way up to your head. They suck everything out of your head and they bring their stuff into your head.
Right.
And their behavior and their way of being is fascinating for the victim. The victim thinks, what is happening? What is going on? What is, you know, how do I keep myself safe? Not in those ways, because they won't understand that they have to keep themselves safe. But, you know, how can I be on the alert? And 95% of the time spent, of their mental energy, is spent on their narcissist. So this is a really red flag for someone who is listening and who is thinking, gosh, do I think about myself? Do I think more about my partner? If you if you spend the majority of your energy on thinking about your partner, trying to understand your partner, trying to predict what they are going to do, it's a red flag.
Ah, that's really, really interesting, because it sort of leads on to the next question that I was going to ask you about. How would you know that you're in a relationship with somebody who's narcissistic? So this is one of the red flags, constantly being preoccupied with your partner.
Yeah. And I have a list with 10 questions. I don't know. Do you put a little link under our podcast?
Yes.
I'll send that link to you, because there are 10 questions.
Brilliant.
That will help you to identify if you have a narcissist in your life. And those questions are all about you and how you feel.
Yes.
If you are uncomfortable in the presence of, say, your narcissist or someone, it might be a narcissist. If you feel insecure around that person, if you think they're having double standards, if they put you down, if you know, if you think, I want to reach this person, I can't. I want to explain, I can't. There is no emotional availability. So it's if you go through that, if you learn to read the signs inside you, those give good indications.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
And I wanted to say, but then what most victims of emotional abuse do, it's called cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
Cognitive dissonance is the concept where something happens and you know or you feel it's not quite right.
Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable. So what you want to do is you want to make it better. And how do you make it better? By coming up with an explanation. Yeah, that makes it all right. So, and it's usually having an excuse for someone's behavior.
Right.
So, for instance, your narcissist spoiled the evening. You went out for dinner and it was all about them and they were putting you down and they didn't want you to drink wine, controlling. It's another thing. Yeah. They didn't want you to do that. And it was a real miserable evening. Mm. You come home, you think, well, that was a bit of a, you know, not how I was hoping for. He wasn't very nice last night. And then immediately the next thought comes up, but he was very busy at work. He was really stressed. So actually he couldn't help it.
Yes.
And because he couldn't help it, made it acceptable for you.
Yeah. Or I imagine there would also be quite a lot of self-blaming. Yeah. Or maybe I didn't say the right thing or something like that. Does it come into it?
Yeah. Well, a narcissist will not take responsibility for anything that goes wrong because they're always right. Remember, they always have it right. It's always perfect what they do. So if something doesn't go the way they want it, they blame other people.
Yes.
And the easiest person to blame is your partner.
Of course, they are just next to you, right?
Yeah,
and they're you're always on the firing line all the time. Yeah, it's the partner.
They're always there. They're available, and the blaming serves another purpose for the narcissist. The blaming makes the victim feeling insecure,
right?
And it's much easier to control a person who is insecure than a person who is really confident.
Yes, absolutely.
Another thing, people who know themselves as really confident and find themselves, since they are in a relationship with someone, that their confidence is fading, is another red flag.
Ah, okay. So something happens here. You get eroded, yeah? The self-confidence gets eroded over a period of time.
Yes. Because you get the blame, because you're being gaslighted. Gaslighting is being spoken to in a way that makes you question your own reality.
Yeah.
Mm. And a simple thing. Someone, the partner is saying, yeah, I like broccoli or I like this dish with broccoli. You remember, you cook it the next week and he will tell you sort of, I don't understand why you make this horrible dish. I absolutely don't like it.
Right.
You say, yeah, but last week you loved it.
Mm.
And then they will say, no, I never said that.
Okay.
The victim then will think, was that really? Was that really the case? Did I get it wrong? Again, being blamed for things makes you question yourself first, isn't it?
And when
people come out of a narcissistic relationship, they almost have the default position whenever something goes wrong in whatever situation, their first thought is, what did I do wrong?
Right.
Not in general, this didn't work out. What went wrong? No, what did I do wrong?
Yeah. So the blame is always with you. Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to also come. There was just another thought that I had. You know, you were talking about red flags. There's something about the beginning of a relationship with a narcissist, which is quite special. So where you might experience yourself in a different way. Is that right? Where you might actually sort of bask in the glory a little bit of a narcissist. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. The start of a romantic relationship is usually with love bombing.
Yes, that's right.
Love bombing is that, you know, over the top, too good to be true, being treated with all agars and presents and text messages. And you're the love I've been waiting for you all my life. And now my life is really sort of, you're the special person. Mm. You're my soulmate, sort of stuff. And being taken, you know, we're here in London, say being taken by plane to Paris for lunch or something like that. You know, all these sort of extravaganza treatments, which seem too good to be true and which are too good to be true.
Yes. So you should look out for that as well. Yeah. If somebody kind of like overdoes it initially in the early stages of a relationship.
Yes. Mm. And the pattern of the relationship is the love bombing. So that is wow, wow, wow. And then gradually the remarks are coming in. You know, you're being chipped away of how you are. So you're not good enough. How can you say that? That's ridiculous. very gently that starts. Do you know the boiled frog syndrome?
No, I don't.
Then if you pick up a frog and you put it in boiling water, the frog will be doing is jumping out of it and he's gone. Yeah. If you put a frog in cold water, but you start heating the water gradually, the frog will discover that the water is really hot by the time he's already shriveled and he can't jump anymore.
Yes. Oh, that's quite a fitting and sad image, isn't it? Yeah.
And that is what happens with victims of narcissistic abuse. They will not, they haven't seen what is happening gradually.
Yes.
Yeah, they're desensitized, things that are not right, or, you know, nasty remarks. One a day becomes two a day, becomes three a day. Events are spoiled, sort of, you know, that then so gradually sort of happens.
Yeah.
Then there is an unhappiness coming in, which usually mounts into an explosion. And that is what the narcissist will cause. They will sort of, and this is the pattern in the relationship. It's the love bombing. It's then the undermining, and then it's the explosion. Now, after that explosion, the love bombing starts again.
Right. Yes. Just to make sure. That's the sort of trauma bond behavior, isn't it? That keeps you in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for different reasons. I mean, the trauma bond and this cycle, it's like an addiction, like a physical addiction, because what the happy hormones that are being produced in the love bombing states are so good, are so appreciated, are over the top appreciated because of the lack of it for the rest of the cycle.
Yes, right. So that's how you get wheeled in, hooked in again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Think, oh, maybe I maybe just imagined that. It wasn't so bad. Actually, he really loves me. I don't know why I had all these bad feelings, something like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So everything that happens, all the bad things that happens are then with the use of cognitive dissonance, with the, you know, it's sort of all being pushed aside as not important, because what is really important is that love bombing thing. That's what I thrive on. This is what our relationship is.
Yeah, yeah, because it feels so special, doesn't it? Which kind of sort of it ties into another question that's kind of formulating in my head. And I have to be quite careful about how I phrase this, because I don't want to say that that victims, if that's the right term, of narcissists are kind of bringing it on themselves, so to speak. But I wonder, are there people, do you think, who are more susceptible to being taken in by a narcissist?
Research has shown that a typical victim, a typical target, is someone who's highly empathic.
Right, interesting.
Because empathic people are willing to forgive, are willing to give in, are really interested in the other party, in other people. They want to understand. And that's what a narcissist needs. Yeah, they need that attention. They need someone who says, oh, I'm so interested in you. Tell me more. And how about this? And how about that? And why do you do this? And why do you do that? So, and it's almost like they're magnets to each other, because an empath is very keen to rescue and to teach other people that they can be happier and that they can live a richer life. And, you know, so it fits in really well together. Now, what and you said this was so interesting. You said if a victim brings it on themselves, in my way of presenting narcissistic abuse, I'm making the victim 50% responsible for what happens.
Okay.
Because the narcissist is throwing all their abuse out. Yeah. However, if they throw the abuse out, it's not abuse yet. It becomes abuse if another person opens themselves up and starts receiving it.
Yes. That's an interesting point. Right. So it's enabling the narcissist, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, before everyone says, well, it's not my fault that I'm a victim of narcissism. what we are lacking is awareness of narcissism, is knowledge about it, is skills to, you know, to deal with them or to check out if they are a narcissist, techniques, the confidence to sort of really spot one and then choose the behavior that keeps you away from that narcissist. And that's what our work is about. It's all about making people aware. So narcissism is not going to go away. There will always be narcissists. But if they are not enabled, then they will do less harm.
Absolutely. They can't feed on other people then, can they? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So maybe they become the frog then. That's an interesting idea, isn't it? Yeah. If they're not being fed.
I love that. I love that that metaphor for the victim and for the narcissist. And you can you can imagine how difficult it becomes for a narcissist if whatever they try, their really nasty tricks, they don't work, they don't get a response, they can't play their game. They need to try different ways. But in trying to do different ways, they damage less.
Yes. Interesting. Yeah. And have you witnessed that? Have you also witnessed some relationships where actually, you know, the victim decided relatively early on in the relationship, I'm not having that, I'm walking away from this, and that was that.
And I mean, that's really beautiful when that happens.
Of course.
When people step into their power and say, actually, I'm important here. I'm not sacrificing myself for a relationship that is so damaging. I am not being treated like shit, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? But that sort of also presupposes, you mentioned attachment styles at the beginning of the podcast as well. That also presupposes that somebody is secure enough in themselves or have a secure attachment style and kind of know when something is not right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and they're not treated in a way that they deserve to be treated.
Yeah, and that is where self-respect and self-love and self-care comes in. When you say I'm too good to be treated like this.
Absolutely. And what if you, and this is sort of leads me on to another question really, well, what if you haven't quite got the strength, is that the term? Maybe that's not the best term that I can think of here, but what if you haven't quite got the tools yet, let's so to speak, to that enable you to walk away from a narcissistic partner? What would be your recommendation? What are the options here? What can you do when you're stuck in this relationship? Say you've been married already for 30 years or something. Yeah. What do you do?
Well, that is where my book coming. I've got two books, you know.
Yes, that's what I wanted to ask you about.
The second book is The Rule Book of a Narcissist. And it's fascinating that narcissists all over the world, it doesn't matter what culture, what gender, what age, where they are, they seem to behave very, very similar, even using the same language. So based on that, I put together the rules of a narcissist. And they are in my book. On the next page, next to the rules, is the helpful response. If you deal with a narcissist and you notice this behavior, what would be a helpful response for you? So it's...
Can you give us an example? Sorry, Marietta.
An example would be your narcissist is home late. Later than planned. And you want to tell them that sort of, hey, you're home at 8, but you said you were home at 6. What a narcissist will do, they will say, how dare you speak to me like that? And I'm working and I'm the one who brings the money in. And now you tell me off for this. How dare you do that?
Yeah.
In manipulating the conversation like that, he steps away from the comment that you made, the critical note you had. And he then sort of, they change it around and all of a sudden it becomes about you and you doing things wrong. My tip would be, the helpful response would be, stick to your remark. Don't step away from that, keep on repeating, I told you, you are home at 8 and you told me you were going to be home at 6.
Right.
How dare you speak to me? You were going to be home at 6, but you are home at 8.
Yeah.
And then walk away.
Yeah.
Don't engage in any further arguments there, because it will become argumentative and you will come out as the loser.
Right. Yes. Yes. Because I imagine also a whole arsenal will then be employed to be thrown at you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's a really good, that's a really good tip. So kind of stick to your guns and also cut it short. Yeah.
Yeah. This is, I call that JADE. That is a communication technique. Ah. JADE stands for do not justify, argue, defend, or explain.
Brilliant.
Just say what you want.
Right.
Because the more information you give to your narcissist, the more ammunition they have to undermine you.
Ah, yes, of course. Uh-huh.
You might say, I'm not joining you. I'm not going to the rugby with you tomorrow. And then when you say, I'm not going with you to the rugby because I'm tired. Then your narcissist will say, oh, you're tired. Well, you have to go to bed earlier. Or you could have gone to bed earlier. Yeah? And not saying, oh, it's okay, you're not going to the rugby. No, you give them things then to undermine your statements.
Right.
Or I'm not going to the rugby because I've got a headache. Well, you can take a pill for the headache, can't you?
Right. Yeah.
And then you have to go to the rugby. And you don't want to. So if you insecure people will come up with lots of explanations around what they want in order to get the approval.
Yes,
don't go there. Just make short statements.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good advice too. I mean, is there from your experience, Marietta, is there a point where the kind of dynamic or the interaction between the two partners starts to shift? If the victim changes their stance, if they don't, you know, if they follow the steps that you just outlined, the JADE, does it make a difference?
It makes a huge difference. Because in the day-to-day life, a narcissist is always out there to put you down, to create an argument, to get to vent their anger, because underneath they're angry personalities.
Yeah.
And if you can stop that, at least you have more peace in your life and you are less affected by their behavior. You close yourself off for the abuse that's being thrown at you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're diffusing then as well, aren't you? That's right. So you don't take quite as much of the, not that you don't have that many grenades being logged at you. Yeah. So maybe it's not quite as damaging in the same way.
Yeah. And you know, if you just turn your back on someone or you just leave the room, what can they do? I compare it as playing tennis.
Yeah.
So the narcissist is playing the ball over to the other side and the target, the victim, tries to play the ball back. And then the narcissist will play the ball to the other side of the court and you are running to get the ball and play it back. Yeah. And that's what they do. If you don't play the ball back, there's not a lot of tennis to be had.
It's not a lot of running either. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So they don't play fair. That's right. You can't play fair. If you can't play fair, then don't follow the rules.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Hmm.
There was also another thought that just popped into my head. I wanted to ask you: is narcissism, from your experience, is it sort of gender specific? Are there more men or more women who are narcissistic?
There is no official research, but it seems that about 80% of narcissists are male.
Oh, really? That's very interesting. That's really high.
It is high. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So women, listen out, is our message here. And of course, men, if you are in gay relationships, then you listen out as well. That's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very interesting. I didn't know that. Right. Okay.
It's not an official figure, but there are not a lot of official statistics about narcissists, because a narcissist is not, they don't have a problem with their condition. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a problem and people don't give them what they want, but then they are very clever in manipulating and in the end getting what they want. They won't go to a therapist and say, oh, I'm unhappy, because they're perfect.
Yeah, I've never ever worked with a narcissist in all my time as a therapist. No.
Yeah, no. And that makes sense, because they will never seek you out to ask to change, to make changes. They won't change. That's another thing, is when you are with a narcissist, it's highly unlikely that they change.
Right.
It's just not in their makeup and not in, you know, they are perfect. So why would they change? Mm-hmm.
Mm. Of course. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, we don't see them. I mean, this is also, and this is a really interesting point as well, isn't it? So there's little hope in a way, isn't there, for a narcissist to change their patterns or behavior?
No, I would say it's a no-hoper.
Yeah.
An absolute no-hoper. And this is interesting. Mm. The relationship with my mother was very painful and was really difficult for me. And I tried to make it work nearly all my life, because my mother told me it was my fault the relationship didn't work. And then conventional therapists were saying to me, oh, yeah, no, you have to repair the relationship with your mother. And it was something that was irreparable. It wasn't there in the first place, and it could never have been there. Or people are saying to me, oh, I'm sure your mother loves you. And I'm thinking, I'm sure my mother didn't. She didn't. And
she didn't know how to.
So where does that come from? So it's the myth of the mother, you know, the nasty mother is very uncomfortable for a lot of people. My turning point came when I gave up hope, when I realized what her condition was, and when I knew and accepted that she would never change. Moment, everything changed for me.
Right. But that was a long, painful road, no doubt.
My journey was really long. I was 50, I was 58, 55, 58 when I reached that point.
Yeah.
And that is what makes my work so satisfying, and why I'm so motivated, because I don't want anyone to spend that long to discover that something is wrong in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. So really, I mean, the sort of takeaway message from this podcast today is about, as far as possible, to kind of walk away from a narcissist as soon as possible. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely spot on. Yeah. The other thing is that I want to stress is you are the one who can diagnose the narcissist by linking into how you feel about this person.
Right. Yes.
If you are uncomfortable around someone, just shrug your shoulders and walk away. You don't have to come up with justifications for it all.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really powerful message as well. I think that's a good message for anyone, isn't it? Whether they're with a narcissist or not, or it's just that if this goes on, if you experience the relationship as that troubling for you, then there's something not right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And what you do, you're not even blaming the other party. You're just saying, you know what? This doesn't feel right for me. So I decide to step away.
Yeah. And this is, so if you feel undermined, if you feel like it sort of dismantles your sense of self, that's never a good thing. Absolutely. That's a really good point. And and of course, that's the work that you do, isn't it? That's the work that you do with your clients, enabling them to kind of spot that. And to develop that kind of self-confidence and self-belief again. I imagine.
Because that is chipped away over the years of emotional abuse. People lose themselves, they lose their confidence, they have been trained to look for external validation, wanting to do everything right for the narcissist. And you know, building yourself up and changing your view of the world in order to heal is It's a journey of discoveries, almost rediscovering who you are, of growing up. And this is interesting because yesterday I had a new client who also had an abusive family, and she was in her 50s, and she said, "I never grew up." And that makes perfect sense, because if you're under the controlling influence of an emotional abuser, all your mental energy and all your focus is on the abuser.
Yeah.
So there's nothing left for you.
Yes, absolutely. And also, I imagine a lot of people are very, it isolates you, doesn't it? Because you haven't got time then for other people.
And it's not only what you do to yourself within the abusive relationship, but a narcissist will actively alienate you from friends and family.
Right, yes.
And again, that is a campaign. They won't say overnight, "Oh, we're not going to your family anymore. I don't like them." They will drip feed that. Your mother has really awkward behavior. God, your father, he drinks quite a lot. Your brother is, God, such a bore. That sort of things, you know, continuously. And then you start to, as the target, you start to look at your family members and, oh, yeah, I've actually never noticed that. Oh, maybe he is right. Oh, maybe this is what is going on.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And of course, if you haven't got anyone else to bounce off and to check, you only have your partner to continuously tell you that there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
Then you start believing it. Yeah.
But then there's also this thing that the narcissist behaves in their nasty ways behind closed door. And towards the outside world, they have a mask. They can easily be the heart and soul of a party. They can easily be the people who are generous with money, and they can easily be the one who comes across very caring. Now imagine that's your partner, and then, you know, you come home and he totally changes. You then think, I'm going to talk to my friends about him or about our relationship, because I've got a real, you know, I want to discuss this. And then the friend will look at you and think like, what? He's such a nice man. How
he's
can
so
he
charming.
Say that?
Yes,
he's so charming. I don't believe you. People find it difficult to believe. And that makes the journey also very lonely. Because it's almost as if you have to defend your opinion about your partner.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah.
And therefore the focus on yourself and how you feel is so helpful. Because if you say to a friend, I feel really uncomfortable in the relationship, then you talk about something else as then when you say, oh, my partner behaves really weird or really nasty or really.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because you can say, you know when you feel in a particular way, if you can tune into yourself. Yeah. And it might be quite helpful also to kind of think about what enables you to tune in. Because, I mean, I suppose some people really struggle to have some sense of what am I actually experiencing? What am I feeling? How do you encourage that with your clients?
It's all writing exercises.
Okay, good.
Yeah. For instance, if you are with a partner and there is a situation that doesn't feel good to you, and it just doesn't feel good, but that is fake, then sit down and think, how do I feel about it? What do I think about it? So I can feel uncomfortable. That's it. But what do I think about it? And thoughts are coming up. Oh my God, have I done it wrong? Oh, where did it go? About a cycle of thoughts. Well, there's a feeling there as well. If you look at those thoughts, because then the fear comes in, and you can see that in your way of thinking. How do you behave? Are you getting twitchy? Do you walk away? Are you starting to shout? Are you sort of, what is going on? And the last thing is, how does it feel in my body? Because your body will give you excellent pointers is going on. So that is a way of starting to train yourself to recognize what is going on. And if you struggle with feelings and you're not quite sure about feelings and what they are, there are on the internet, there are loads of feeling lists.
Yeah? Yes.
Just download those and look at them and think, would I feel this at one particular point? Do I know this feeling? What is it connected with? And in that way, sort of develop your feeling.
Vocabulary,
yeah. And not your, that I like that, an emotional vocabulary where you then sort of start to distinguish between fear and stress. Stressed and sadness and a little bit of sadness. So there's a little bit of I can't find a word now, but
I can't. It's interesting, isn't it? It's always an interesting exercise. If you ask people to describe feelings, people usually only can list about 7 or 8. We don't have that kind of vocabulary. Really helpful to develop. There's lots of stuff on the internet, isn't there? This is a feeling wheel, which I often use in my sessions as well. But this is really helpful, and it's really good, helpful tips for someone in a relationship with a narcissist to kind of practice, to kind of reflect on what am I thinking, feeling, etc. What am I feeling in my body? That gives you clues.
Yeah.
And you learn to trust yourself and you learn to listen to yourself in that way.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Lovely. Marietta, I'm aware that I'm well over the time that I thought we'd be talking, but we could be talking about this for hours, couldn't we? It's really interesting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Let's book the next session,
Totally. Thank you so much. I think it's absolutely fantastic advice that you've given us. I'll put the link to your books into the show notes as well so that listeners can look you up.
Yeah.
And just to say that, I mean, I looked at the From Victim to Victor. That was the first book that you read. It's got fantastic. It's a really great guide that helps you to look at techniques and ways of addressing what we've talked about today. So it's practical and helpful, and anyone can do it. It's very accessible information. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
And I'm very much looking forward to looking at the rule book of the narcissist as well, the Narcissism Self-Help Guide, which no doubt has got excellent information as well. So thank you so much for today's session, and hopefully we reach some listeners who have either encountered this or are encountering this experience in their life at the moment, or know someone who does and who can pass on the information and get this across. That would be so valuable.
I'll send you the link to the 10 questions. Brilliant. That will help you to identify if you are subjected to narcissistic abuse.
Fantastic. I include it in the show notes. Thank you so much. So take good care and hope to see you sometime soon.
Okay. Bye, Angela. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. If you'd like to find out more about creating great relationships, go to therelationshipmaze.com, and I look forward to seeing you there. And remember to tune in to the next podcast.